This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And good afternoon. Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University sitting in as guest host for Tony Perkins this evening. Delighted to be with you. To the program today, we have a couple guests that will be coming on in the second and the third segment to deal with the issue of fake news. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a monologue here as we prep for that. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234 here on Washington Watch, 866-372-7234. As we get ready to talk about the main theme for the evening, I want to deal with some of the current news, however. You all have been paying attention to the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting. And as we understand it right now, Esteban Santiago flew in from Canada, a 26-year-old male who entered the Fort Lauderdale airport, took out a handgun, and proceeded to shoot people. Several are dead at this point. The news that I'm reading indicates that there are five. Santiago has been captured unharmed. You know, we've had several shootings in recent years, and one of the most recent ones was in Roseburg, Oregon, at a community college. I'm going to read to you an open letter to the President of the United States that I wrote after the Roseburg shooting. And while we don't know the motive of Santiago yet at this point, and I don't want to imply that indeed his motive is the same as that of Chris Harper Mercer at the community college in Roseburg, I do think some of the questions I have and some of the specific things that I'm asking President Obama to consider are pertinent in this case as well. So I'm going to read this as an opening salvo today. Again, I wrote this in May to President Obama. Mr. Obama, this past Thursday, Chris Harper Mercer entered a classroom at the community college in Roseburg, Oregon, and proceeded to ask his fellow students to stand up if they were Christians. And when they stood, he shot them in the head. A few moments later, in Washington, D.C., you took to the stage, and your remarks lasted slightly over 12 minutes, and in those comments, you said absolutely nothing about Christians. Nothing. A 12-minute speech and not one word about those who were targeted for execution. Mr. President, perhaps you can understand why we all watch with great concern as you prepare to visit the people of Roseburg. Christians are being beheaded in the Middle East, and you have lectured us about the Crusades. Christians have been killed in Charleston, and you have preached to us about the National Rifle Association. Christians now have been singled out and murdered in Oregon, and mum's the word. Why? What would you have said, Mr. President, had the victims been Muslims? What would you have said had they been targeted because they were transgender or gay or wearing a hoodie? Would you have condemned it? Would you have called for hate crimes legislation? Would you have confronted the ideology that led to the crime? Would you have lectured us about phobias and bigotry? Perhaps you can understand why the Christian community from coast to coast is praying that you will finally speak on our behalf rather than against us, and that you will defend our faith rather than disregard it. Perhaps, Mr. President, you can understand why millions of followers of Christ across the nation and across the world say that they have heard your silence, and it is deafening. Mr. President, perhaps you can understand why after we have watched time and time again as Christians are singled out for execution, we are not joining you in celebrating your desire to disarm the citizenry while arming the criminals. And one final word. Mr. President, please stop the pedantic posturing about more gun laws being the solution. The data do not bear this out. If the solution is a gun-free country, then why did this shooting just happen in a gun-free zone? If the solution is fewer guns, then why is violent crime declining, by and large, across America at the time when gun sales are at an all-time high? Could it be, Mr. President, that the problem is not guns, but rather ideas? Could it be that preaching victimization and fomenting class resentment is the problem? Could it be that race baiting and mocking our God and our guns is the problem? Could it be that belittling biblical morality and dumbing down the value of life by creating a culture of death is the problem? Could it be that worshiping government rather than God is the problem? Mr. President, could it be that these terrible ideas and not the law-abiding citizens exercising their constitutional right to protect themselves are the problem? Mr. President, you don't stop evil by teaching victimization and revenge. You stop evil by teaching virtue and repentance. Newsflash. The shooter didn't have the Ten Commandments or the Beatitudes posted on his Facebook account. Take away his guns, and he will use a sword. Take away his sword, and he will use a club. Take away his club, and he will use a rock. And when you take away a culture's soul, there is nothing to stop the evil that lurks in every human heart. You can outlaw guns and swords and clubs and rocks, but without the gospel, we are all still broken and angry men, filled with rage and hatred. As we prepare to think about this situation in Fort Lauderdale, let us consider the fact that ideas are the dangerous things here, not the objects we hold in our hands. It's the idea that's held in the mind and the heart and the soul that kills, not the club, not the pen, not the pencil, not the sword, not the knife. It's the person with the ideas. If you agree, you can call in. If you disagree, you can call in later on in the program, 866-372-7234. Well, what we're going to do for most of the program now, until we take calls, is we're going to talk about this issue of fake news. Now, you've been following the story. Here's my summary. Postmods who don't believe in objective truth are now complaining vehemently about news that isn't true. I'll say that again. A postmodern culture that claims not to believe in the objectivity of truth is now complaining vehemently about news that isn't true. Now, what's the deal? Why is there so much concern over fake news? I thought it was the left that believed that it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you, quote-unquote. I thought it was the left that believed that there was no such thing as truth, but rather only cultural constructs and personal opinions. I thought it was the left that had been telling us for the past several decades that all morality is relative and that any claims of moral absolutes are absolutely immoral. Why the outrage over fake news? Why be concerned with someone else's truth claims, quote-unquote? If we can celebrate fake women in public restrooms and fake gender in our public universities, if we can celebrate fake marriage in our courts, and if we can celebrate fake science in our schools, what is the big deal over fake news? I thought it didn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you. I thought there was no such thing as truth, and that that was the truth. This is what we've been teaching, and this is what we've been told decade after decade in our schools, in our culture, in our courtrooms, and we've been told from Anthony Scalia on down that the human being has the right to define his own reality in his search for meaning. This was the pretext for the Obergefell decision. This has been the pretext for much of the moral relativism that's been taught in our schools for the last generation or two. You see, relativism apparently only works when those who champion it have power. They are never so relative in their defense of their own rights when power is lost, and they are the ones suffering, and we're seeing that right now in the daily news with the concern about fake news. I refer you to C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis told us in Mere Christianity, and I quote, "Everyone has heard people quarreling. We can learn something very important from listening to the kind of things they say. They say things like this. How'd you like it if anyone did the same to you? Well, that's my seat. I was there first. Leave him alone. He isn't doing any harm. Why should you shove in first? Give me a bit of your orange. I gave you a bit of mine," says Lewis. And then he goes on and says this. People say things like that every day, educated people as well as uneducated, and children as well as grown-ups. Now, what's interesting is that it looks, in fact, very much as if both parties had in mind some kind of law or rule of fair play or decent behavior or morality or whatever you like to call it, about which they really do agree. And they have. If they had not, they might, of course, fight like animals, but they could not quarrel in any human sense of the word. Quarreling means, now listen to this, quarreling means trying to show that the other man is wrong. And there would be no sense in trying to do that unless you and he had some sort of agreement as to what right and wrong are. Just as there would be no sense in saying that a footballer had committed a foul unless there was some agreement about the rules of football. You see, the left's angst over fake news simply makes the conservative point. They are presently arguing our case for us. They are screaming from the high heavens that there is such a thing as objective truth and we can't function as a free people without it. Fine, I'm glad they're finally admitting that. I'm glad they finally realize this. Now let's apply this standard to all areas of society, not just to elections, but to bathrooms and biology and marriage and morality. We are at the point in our culture where we finally have the left acknowledging that they're sawing off the very branch upon which they sit, and that if we create a culture of total relativism, then there is, as C.S. Lewis told us, no measuring rod outside of those things being measured, and therefore you can do no measuring. If you don't have boundaries, you can't play football. If you don't have a measuring rod, you can't measure anything that you're trying to assess or measure, such as a piece of wood that you want to cut for construction. If you don't have a ruler, a yardstick, a tape measure outside of the thing that you're measuring, you can do no measuring. This is only common sense. And everyone who is arguing that fake news is wrong is admitting that being fake is wrong. Now, if fake news is wrong, then why in the world would we accept the fallacy, the fantasy, the fabrication of fake women? Why are we allowing women to be insulted and dumbed down to nothing but the sum total of another person's sexual inclinations, and we're allowing a woman to be insulted, and we're suggesting that she's nothing but a leprechaun, she's nothing but a fantasy, she's nothing but a fabrication, because any male that claims that he is female can then claim the status of being a woman? Now, if that isn't fake gender, what is? It contradicts biology. It contradicts logic. It contradicts the facts of who we are. It contradicts our physiology. It contradicts our genetics. At Oklahoma Wesleyan University, we still teach science. We believe in biology, and we believe that women are real. We don't believe they're fake. We do believe in telling the truth in the news and that it should be confronted. We should believe that those things that have been said that aren't true should be measured against something. And that measuring rod outside of those things being measured is God's objective truth. We do hold these truths to be self-evident. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our Constitution and our founding documents declare that there are truths that our free republic are based upon. Yes, telling lies is wrong. Fake news is wrong. But if the left wants to confront this, they have to admit that truth is real. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch this afternoon. We're going to take a commercial break, and coming up afterward, we'll have Tim Graham with the Media Research Center helping me dissect this issue of fake news further. We'll be right back after the break.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What do the Vatican, Malta, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Chile have in common? Abortion is not allowed under any circumstances. These six nations are joined by numerous others who only allow abortion if the mother's life is in danger. Even then, abortion is only allowed sparingly. Yet while many nations limit abortion, the United States is one of only seven countries in the world that permit elective abortion right up until the moment of birth, putting us in the top 4% of having the most abhorrent abortion policies in the world, a distinction we share with repressive regimes such as North Korea and China. Numerous third world countries protect the unborn, yet the so-called leader of the free world butchers them. Which is the more civilized society? May God bring us to repentance. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in this afternoon as guest host for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I welcome your calls, especially as we enter into the final segment of the program. My guest in this particular segment is Tim Graham of the Media Research Center. Tim is the executive editor of Newsbusters and is the Media Research Center's director of media analysis. As I set you up, Tim, first of all, welcome. Welcome aboard, Tim. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Let me set this up a little bit, and then I'm going to turn you loose and have you ask a few, answer a few questions and give us some direction on this issue of fake news. You know, we're reading it in the media, we're hearing it on whatever, TV and radio and whatnot, that Facebook and Google are arbiters of fake news. Zuckerberg actually came out, thankfully, in my view, and would have nothing to do with that. He pushed back saying that the bulk of what people read on Facebook is authentic, and there's only a small part of it that's fake or a hoax. We need to remind ourselves that the First Amendment of the Constitution states that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So here we are today with this argument and some suggestions from the elites in D.C. and elsewhere that somehow there needs to be a committee controlling the media that we receive now because the election was somehow influenced by fake news. So maybe the first question I should ask you, Tim, is what is fake news? Lead us through that, and then we'll try to figure out what to do about it.
Well, it depends on who you're letting define your terms. I think that the liberal media basically want to describe fake news as news that's coming often from overseas vendors who are trying to make money, you know, with clicks, coming up with wild stories like Pope Francis endorses Trump, you know, things that you should know instinctively are not true. And nobody's saying, gee, we should have more of that. You know, I really need that in my Facebook feed. I really need some falsehood.
Right.
The problem becomes is as we understand liberal arrogance on these matters, fake news ends up being a much broader topic of basically most of what conservatives say is misinformation. So the concern here would be that Zuckerberg or these Facebook minders would say, well, you can't post that Brent Bozell column on media bias. That's fake because we don't agree with it. You know, that's the concern, I think, for many people, is that, for example, they would try to say that the videotaped exposés of Planned Parenthood are all false, because that's what they want it to be. They don't want anybody to discuss the reality. So they're going to just consign the whole thing to a fake news bin. That's what we're concerned about. You know, them trying to use third-party so-called independent groups like PolitiFact, we've been very upfront in showing how dramatically biased groups like PolitiFact are in, you know, constantly suggesting that Trump is, you know, 5 or 6 times as dishonest as Hillary Clinton.
And I'm going to, let me suggest something here. I'll give you a little bit of free rein to run with this one after I say it, but it seems awfully ironic, and I'm assuming that many people have thought the same thing that I'm going to say right now, that the party that gave us the Benghazi story of a video being the cause of the Benghazi attack, a candidate who told us that she had been under fire as she landed in the Middle East during a trip, and that turned out to be false. Brian Williams gives us a fake story about his involvement in covering the Middle East war. These people give us these deceptive statements. I will call them what they are, lies. But yet they're turning around and crying that somehow the stories that led to Donald Trump's election were fake. Irony of all ironies, in my view. Any response?
Yeah, this is where it depends on how we define our terms of fake news. Because basically the way the liberal elite wanted to define it is, well, liberals aren't guilty of it. You know, liberals don't. If Brian Williams wasn't committing fake news when he was bragging on a comedy show. Hillary.
Even though what he said wasn't true.
Right, is that they would say, well, that's not fake news because it was another news show. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Is you're going to find ways to rationalize. Mm. That doesn't fit my very narrow category that basically means news I don't like. So, I mean, again, obviously Donald Trump said things on the campaign trail that were provably false. You know, our whole point was, as you just underlined, Hillary Clinton does not have a record of being a truth teller.
Right.
She just does not. Anybody who studied her record, not just in the last cycle, but going back to 1992, 1993, when she debuted on the national scene, what did they say about, you know, the Whitewater matter? They lied through their teeth. They certainly lied through their teeth about the Lewinsky matter for 6 or 7 months.
Absolutely.
So
in the last 30 seconds we have, probably before we go to a break, what's the solution? How should we, as consumers of the news, respond to this cry of fake news?
Well, first, you know, we have to say we do believe in news and information with integrity that is the truth. Obviously, conservatives, that's the first thing. You have to base your politics on the truth. The problem is we just don't trust the people who say they want to be the sole definers of the truth.
In other words, trust the public to digest the information that they receive and make decisions accordingly, rather than handing over power to some elite group in some smoke-filled room that's going to decide what news we get to read and what news we don't get to read.
Well, liberals are mourning about how we don't have a common set of facts anymore. And what they really mean by that is social media has messed up what we used to have, which was we had three networks, and whatever they said was true was true. And whatever they said wasn't news, wasn't news.
Tim, we're running out of time. I thank you so much for joining us. Tim, with the Media Research Center, and I appreciate your input and helping us figure out what to do with this fake news story. This is Dr. Everett Piper with Oklahoma Wesleyan University sitting in as guest host for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back after the break.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
The final job numbers for the Obama administration out. This is for the month of December. The unemployment rate goes up 4.7%. That's good news. I'll tell you in a minute why. We added 156,000 private sector jobs. They were expecting about 180,000, so certainly missed expectations. But look, not a big deal, not a market mover. It is fairly irrelevant. I believe, I said this to someone earlier, that any number between 100,000 and 200,000 is not going to change anything. So it would have had to been significantly lower or significantly higher to have a positive or negative effect either way on the markets. This is not a big deal for the market. Unemployment rate goes up 4.7%. That is because more people are entering the workforce. That is very good news. Well, wait a minute. I don't understand how there can be more people entering the workforce because we're at full employment. Where are these people coming from? Oh, wait a minute. Could it be that not everybody out of the workforce is sitting on the beach or playing golf like the Obama administration and the government has been telling us? Could it be that there's actually people that are outside the workforce coming in now that need to be in the workforce? Yes, of course there is. Again, more confirmation of something I've been talking about for a long time and more contradicting of what the administration has been talking about for the last 5 years. Not everybody is retired. Average work week didn't budge. Wages ticked up a little bit. The other big news, trade deficit climbs 6.8%. That's not good news.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Everett Piper here, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. By the way, if you want to contact us and think about a Christian education that stands boldly and unapologetically for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture, for the objectivity of God's revelation as a context for what a college degree should be, go to www.okwu.edu. That's www.okwu.edu, Oklahoma Wesleyan University. All right, we're talking about fake news. And our guest that's going to be joining us right now is John Hayward with Breitbart. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me.
John, I'm going to set you up a little bit here by introducing you a little bit further, and then I have a couple questions, and we'll let you run, all right?
Okay.
Okay. My one-string banjo in this particular program is to focus on this issue of fake news, and I find it awfully ironic that a postmodern culture that's been telling us for the last 20, 30, 40 years that there is no such thing as truth, that everything is relative, and it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you, is now crying over the fact that the news that they don't like isn't true. My first response is, when did you start believing in truth? That is aside, you wrote an article recently, and I think the quote from that article is something like this. There's been a virtual Klan rally of hate hoaxes since the 2016 presidential election. As a mob of frustrated social justice warriors, bored youth, and resentful liberals hide under hoods of lies while trying to tar and stigmatize Donald Trump and his ordinary American supporters. I think in that article you mentioned things such as the female Bowling Green State University, my alma mater, by the way, student who lied about Trump fans throwing rocks at her, a Chicago student fakes hateful notes containing homophobic slurs and Trump references, a woman fabricates a tale of sexual assault because she was distraught over the election, and the University of Oklahoma professor describes non-existent police reports about an anti-Muslim pamphlet. Talk to us about this fake news issue and what you think we as consumers should be doing about it.
One of the things I think is interesting about those fake news stories, about those hate crime hoaxes, is how many of them began as social media posts. Only half of them, as I recall, began with somebody going on Facebook or Twitter and putting together a post that said I was attacked and then a bunch of Trump supporters beat me up or whatever they did. And it doesn't seem like they thought the police would become involved. They didn't put a lot of work into their hoax. They thought they could just get away with spreading it like wildfire on social media, and it did. It would bubble through social media, other people people would pay attention to it, trending Twitter hashtags would take shape, and then would come the mainstream media. The media would notice all this and swoop in, and a newspaper would say, wow, here's this terrible thing that happened to this poor person, and it would become a big story, and only then would the police get involved. And in many cases, the police would notice the major media report and say, that didn't happen, nobody called us, there was no assault on that street corner, and the whole thing would proceed to fall apart. And I think that gives you an insight as to how fake news really works. A lot of it is social media based, and a lot of it is because reporters for newspapers are lazy now. They don't want to do the shoe leather reporting. They want to look on Twitter, and when they see something is trending and they pop in and see a hashtag has caught fire, well, then they write a story. And they don't always stop to say, this is alleged, this is a complaint, there is no proof. We need to talk to the police or to the people involved.
Wait a second, John. I've heard on MSNBC and NBC and CBS and ABC that it's you, it's Breitbart, that's responsible for perpetuating all this fake news, that you're the boogeyman.
Of course, and it's a political crossfire because people on all sides will say, well, this is a fake story or that's a fake story, and we start arguing with each other over how things were sourced or investigated. Was something an opinion? If you accurately report what someone says, and this could go for anybody, including a major network, if someone comes along with a story and you just report what they said, are you spreading fake news if it turns out it wasn't true? Was it your responsibility to investigate that person further? At what point, as a news organization, should you say this allegation is rather thin, and I'm not going to run with this? And I think, having observed all of this for many years now, that one of the problems is that the news cycle is so rapacious, it's so hungry, and it's 24/7, 365 online, on websites, on news shows, in print. There is so much voracious appetite for content that the standards have been relaxed. The story that I think many years ago, 30, 40 years ago, would have been considered thinly sourced and hearsay and dismissed is suddenly, well, what's wrong with it? We've got to fill that window of content. We're going to put up a story on this. And I think that's how a lot of it gets going. People are very shrewd about manipulating media outlets and telling them what they wanted to hear.
So when you hear proposals or at least implications from the power base, whatever that may be, I'll just describe it as the elites in D.C. in the Beltway, that somehow the media needs to be controlled and there needs to be a council or a panel that decides what media that the average Joe citizen can read, and that we need to be guaranteed there needs to be a good housekeeping stamp of approval, if you will, on the news. How do you respond to those implications?
That's the cure that's worse than the disease, as the old saying goes. I've heard that argument before from China, from Russia, from Cuba, from all these totalitarian states. That's what they always do. A couple of years ago, about 2 years ago exactly, I think, the Chinese became very, very excited about the idea of controlling fake news. They started banning blogs and websites from carrying news content. This day, if you're in China and you run a website, you can't carry anything that you claim is news unless the Ministry of Truth has signed off on it and given you permission, and if not, they'll come after you. So that's how this totalitarian control always starts.
John, thank you so much for joining us. So the take-home here is, if we want to be a totalitarian, despotic country, then we can allow somebody else to control our media. Otherwise, we've got freedom of the press. Yes.
Exactly.
Thank you, John.
Thank you,
John. This is Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins as the guest host for Washington Watch. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. I welcome your calls and encourage them. 866-372-7234. We'll be right back after the break.
You know I didn't marry you because the earth moved the first time we kissed. I married you because you're a good man. And through the years, I have been moved time and time again by your dedication to me and by your good example to our sons and our grandkids. I guess I could say you became the man of my dreams. Oh, Harold, I know you can't talk now, but somewhere deep inside, I know you still love me too.
How's he doing today, Mrs. Nelson?
Well, you know, about the same as always. But I think he heard me today. We've been having some nice conversation.
In sickness and in health, godly marriage helps hold us together as a society. a message from the American Family Association.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper and his wife Melanie will be special guests on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson this coming Monday and Tuesday as they talk about Losing Cooper. The book is a moving account of the Jasper family after the tragic death of their five-year-old son, Cooper. Please pray this show will offer real hope for anyone experiencing tragedy. Don't miss J.J. and Melanie Jasper on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, Monday and Tuesday at 9:30 Central Time, morning or evening on AFR.
The AFA Journal helps you stay in touch with issues of the day. Articles by award-winning writers open your eyes with different perspectives. Shorter pieces document current trends. You'll find monthly columns by financial expert Dan Celia and AFA President Tim Wildman. Even the ads put you in touch with various AFA departments and other ministry organizations. Subscribe to the AFA Journal and stay up to date on the American Family Association and the culture war when you visit afajournal.org.
When the Son of God hung on a cross, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Well, this is Johnny Todd, and you know, I find that so amazing. There Jesus was impaled on a piece of wood, profusely bleeding and in searing pain, and still he goes to God's word. Jesus quoted from Psalm 22 when he cried out, and Jesus was showing us where we should go to find answers when we suffer. It's always the Word of God. So, friend, no matter what your cross today, keep voicing God's Word. When you do, you're speaking God's language. You're echoing His own vocabulary back to Him. So if you have something to voice to God today, borrow your words from a passage of Scripture. God delights in His children when they speak His language. So, friend, encounter the Lord today through His wonderful Word.
Welcome back to Washington Watch this Friday afternoon. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, just north of Tulsa. Honored to be filling in for Tony as he's on vacation, taking a break this afternoon. We have a few guests. So far, we've been talking about fake news. We've also talked a little bit about the shooting that has just taken place in Fort Lauderdale. But I'm going to take the last 15 minutes of the program to respond to callers. And right now we have David in Kansas. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'll pose my question, and then I'll get off the air if that's okay, because I'm a little bit nervous here.
That's all right. Go ahead.
At the intersection of fake news and half truth, because there is news out there that's half truth, it's half truth and not so much truth. And guns is the Fast and Furious, as I recall. The original Fast and Furious, when the Obama administration, their Justice Department, was caught letting guns go south into Mexico without any check, they said, well, that was part of the Bush administration. Well, come to find out, the Bush administration, what they were doing was they were letting the gun sales take place on this side of the border, and as soon as those people would cross the border, they'd call the Mexican authorities and say, hey, there's guns on the way into Mexico, and you need to hear the culprits that you need to apprehend. It almost would appear to me that the Obama administration could have cared less about the Mexican people, and had they wanted such an outcry out of that turbulence, that they were trying to, it almost appears that they were trying to manipulate the American people into more gun control, and they could care less about the Mexican people. I'm going to get off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David, for calling in. I think your point's legitimate, David, and we look at the other examples in our culture right now where fake news has been perpetuated for political gain or for a political cause or to spur on a particular initiative or policy. And the Fast and Furious situation, which is old news now, is appropriate for you to use as an example. I think what I'd like to point out as we continue to digest the story of fake news is really the left, the progressives, the postmods have played into our hand. And when I say our, I'm referring to conservative Christians. Conservative Christians believe in conserving things We are conservationists. We believe in conserving the environment that God has given us to be stewards over, yes. But we also believe in conserving things that are perhaps even more important. And those things are the time-tested, immutable, enduring, unchangeable principles and truths of God, the revelation of God, the biblical truths that he has given us, those self-evident truths endowed to us by our Creator. Conservatives believe in conserving those truths. So that's the high ground. That ground is stable and strong. That is the rock of truth that Christ has given us and God has given us within the Scriptures that we can stand with great stability and confidence as we engage in disagreement, argument, disputes, and debate. And as C.S. Lewis told us in the words that I shared with you all earlier, you have to have that strength and that stability, that measuring rod that is unchangeable if we're going to actually engage in a robust exchange of ideas. That's the value of the academy. I'm getting off on my soapbox here, but my point is this. Yes, stand strong for their call to confront the fake. Say, bless you. I'm glad that you want to talk about what's fake and what's false and what's true and what's real. I'm glad you want to talk about lies. Now, you must be admitting that they exist. And if you admit that lies exist, then you have to admit that truth objectively exists as a measurement against those lies. If you want to talk about what's fake, then you have to admit that what is real actually exists as a measuring rod against those fake things. So they've given us back the high ground, and we need to take it with confidence and courage because God has given us that stability and that rock and that foundation upon which to stand. Thanks, David. The next caller is, I believe, Richard from Nebraska.
Yeah, this is Richard Hyatt.
Richard, welcome to Washington Watch. What can I do for you?
Yeah, well, just listening to the beginning of your program about the things Barack Obama promised. Like he came in, and he was elected as a person who believed in God's definition of marriage. He called himself a Christian, but yet on the day of the vote where same-sex marriage became legal, he turned his back, or he turned his ears from one of the Proverbs, I believe, from hearing the law of God. And in that same proverb, it says, he that turns his ear from hearing the law of God, even his prayer shall be an abomination. Mm. And on that day when it became legal, same-sex marriage, he turned his back or his ear from hearing these words of Jesus, remember Lot's wife. But that was happening long before that was that vote came into possibility, before that vote came into effect. So what I might concern more now is not the politics of America, but the Christianity of the church. The solution is not Donald Trump, although I see the possibility, like when he's the evangelical support, the Donald support, to support Donald Trump, and I do myself. I'm on my soapbox too right now. But as he's not sure he deserves their support. And I can agree with him. But then again, now, I could also agree that the church might not deserve a man like Donald Trump. What he wants to do is establish the borders of one nation under God. And yeah. Right when they had the Democratic National Convention, it opened up with his truth goes marching on. Yet he wasn't allowed to stay there. His truth goes marching on, Jesus, sang by a black Christian choir. He had to march out because he wasn't allowed, because I'm talking about Jesus there. His stance against sodomy,
right,
and infanticide.
Okay. All right, Richard. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. And I think what I hear in your comments, Richard, is the issue of Donald Trump and the leadership of our country. And many of us on the evangelical side of the fence had great difficulty during the election because, some of you listening to me right now were on board with Donald Trump from the very beginning. Some of you still are not on board. You're never Trumpers. Others of you were for a different candidate. And once that candidate lost in the primary, you had to make a decision. I've talked before on this program about I was a outspoken proponent of Ted Cruz. My wife was an outspoken proponent of Rubio. But neither one of those gentlemen prevailed. So in the general election, what do we do? What do we do when it comes to the biblical responsibility to engage culture and be salt and light? Salt to a rotting culture and light to the darkness of sin. What do we do? Do we hunker down in a foxhole and just run and just ignore the whole battle because we don't like the alternatives before us? Or do we have an obligation to try to fight for the greatest amount of good and freedom that we can possibly get in any given election at any given time? Now, I'm going to tell you my personal conclusion. At the end of the day, I concluded that I wasn't voting for a king. I was voting for a constitution. As Oz Guinness taught me when I studied at Oxford, I am obligated to vote for a covenant. I am supposed to eschew a hierarchy. Oz argued that a hierarchical government always bends towards power and control, but a covenantal government always lends itself to freedom. He told me that the European Union and France and Belgium are hierarchical, and that the Magna Carta and the U.S. Constitution are covenantal. And I got it. A light bulb went on. I understood that my obligation was to vote for the ideas of the Constitution, the ideas of the covenant, and vote for those principles of freedom, because it was the principles, not the potentate, that was going to make a difference in the United States under a free republic. We don't vote for a king. We vote for a constitution, the ideas of the Constitution. And I would argue that so far, the cabinet appointments and whatnot that Donald Trump is making are much more covenantal, if you will, than hierarchical, at least compared to the previous 8 years. I think we have Eugene in Arkansas. Eugene, are you still with us?
Yes, sir. God bless you, Doctor. Doing a good job for taking over for Tony.
I'm trying my best.
I'm an old retired veteran, Vietnam era, and retired in 2003. But I really appreciate you focusing on the fact that it's not what's in the hand, it's what's in the heart that causes people to do evil. And we need to get back to our roots. George Washington said it is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God in the Bible. Our founding fathers set the greatest example of any generation that I've ever read about or witnessed. I'm 65 now, and I just would like to encourage our judges out there to stop legislating law. Let the legislators do that. I would encourage the young people to start reading the King James Bible, which was our founding father's Bible, to learn the truth and the principles that the all-wise God that created us wants us to learn about so that we can make good decisions in our life. And I appreciate all that y'all are doing. God bless you, sir.
God bless you, Eugene. Thanks for calling in. And back to your first point, your first opening couple sentences there. Ideas matter. And if you don't change the heart, if you don't change the heart, the soul, the mind, the morality of the human being, then it doesn't matter what he has in his hand. It can be a gun, it can be a knife, it can be a club, it can be a rock. That was my point in my open letter to President Obama. You can take away all of these things, but that isn't going to stop the evil that lurks in every human heart. What stops that evil, what is repentance? What stops sin is confession. We have to realize that the human being is a broken, sinful creature. The nature of man is not good. The nature of man is bent toward sin. The Judeo-Christian ethic has always recognized that human beings are not innately righteous and good, that we need to be controlled, and that's why we have the system of government we have. It's set up to actually control the base instincts of man and to have checks and balances against it. And that is the biblical principle. It recognizes that ideas have consequences and that our obligation as a free society is to educate the next generation to be moral, to be righteous, to understand the difference between truth and lies, to understand the difference between fake and fallacy and freedom and fascism, to understand that some things are real and some things aren't, to understand that biology defines our sex and our gender, not you, not the courts, and not the politicians, that there are objective realities out there that cannot be compromised and cannot be changed. These are ideas that matter. And when our country stops embracing those ideas and instead embraces these postmodern constructs of dumbed down humanity and dumbed down morality, we're going to see people taking guns and shooting other people because they have no morality in their soul. We're going to see kids in Chicago abusing a handicapped man because they consider it fun and humorous, because morality has been lost because they've grown up in single-parent families with no father to teach them what's right and what's wrong. We've got to go back to the ideas that have consequences and stop focusing on the instrument in the human hand. Shirley from Tennessee, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much. I was just going to add to this that the devil's logic really does not make sense. And the Democrats need to know that, because they kicked themselves in the teeth, and that's why they lost this election. A point, case in point, the devil convinced the scribes and Pharisees to kill a man who raised Lazarus and Tabitha and a whole bunch of other people from the dead. You cannot kill a man who makes other people live. It's just, it's foolish logic. The devil has convinced the Black Lives Matter people to do foolish things for money, most of whom, by the way, are foreign. They're not Black Americans who were born and raised in this country for years and generations, my people. They're not those. These are foreign folks come in, or they're Black Americans who are Muslims. But he's convincing them to keep all the fight with the liberals for, quote, women's rights, which is abortions, to keep abortion clinics in Black neighborhoods, to keep killing Blacks. How do Black Lives Matter when you're killing them all? It's foolishness. And he convinced the Democrats and the liberals to put Hillary Clinton on the pedestal, to take Ted Cruz down, who she really could have beaten had he stayed in the race, but they took him down and put a whole bunch of negative stuff on TV and the news about him, and then they put up Donald Trump. And then what's so bad is, had Hillary not lied and scandalized and went through her friends and used her money, because Ted didn't have the money of Hillary, so I know Hillary would have won over Ted now that I know how desperately wicked she is. But at that time, a lot of people didn't know. But Bernie Sanders, he could have actually took this whole thing. But Hillary kicked him in the shin by lying and scandalizing and going together with her friends and putting out all types of stuff on Bernie and causing him not to be able to get the vote. So the Democrats, being just like the devil who they follow, they have kicked themselves in the shin. Their logic don't make sense. They use the devil's logic, and that's why they did not win the election, so there's no reason for them to ask why they didn't win. They didn't win because they listened to the devil, whose logic does not make sense. Now, I'll get off
here. Shirley, your sermon was worth the price of admission. Good for you. Thank you so much for calling in. I think the moral of the story after listening to you is this. I think of Bob Dylan. You got to worship somebody. It'll be the devil or it'll be the Lord. And I think you've made it very clear that some of us in this country have started worshiping the devil and we've paid the consequences for it. That's a good ending for the program today. Folks, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me. Thank you for being gracious and allowing me to bumble and stumble through as guest host for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. God bless you for the weekend. Blessings and courage.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.